not supposed to. There's our animated world. So we'll go ahead and what I wanted to do first was just review the foundation principles. And if you were in a, if we were in a classroom, I'd have a piece of paper and you could write on the piece of paper. We've kind of gotten into the habit of listing them graphically. And so there are three, more or less three objects that form the framework for the second three foundation principles. But, so what are they? And I think I have to unmute everybody here. What would you put first on the list, of first of all the foundation principles? It's in good. You got to go faster.
Infinite personal God.
Thank you. That was a good, nice, fast answer. Mm-hmm. Now someone else has to answer. What goes in the middle?
Spiritual man.
Good. What's last?
Natural world.
Yeah, not just natural, but another key word. That
fallen. Fallen world.
And I hope you see that there's uniqueness in all of these that's different from what many people, even many religions, believe. Now, there are ways in which the infinite personal God is related to spiritual man. What's the first of those?
Propositional revelation.
That's right. Oh, I meant to divide these off first. So the personal infinite God is infinite, and that's kind of a supernatural, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But man shares a natural nature with the fallen world, or physical or finite. But man shares a spiritual nature with God and a personality, whereas the fallen world is impersonal. And so that's a little different from what many people believe, especially if they don't even have an infinite God in their belief system. Now, what's the way propositional revelation got mentioned? Propositional is a special word. It just means that it can be written down. It has content independent of necessarily who believes it or not. It can be understood by people the same way. What's another way in which the personal infinite God interacts with the spiritual man in the world?
Jesus came.
Thank you. And not only came to reveal God in the flesh, but also to solve the problem of sin. So we'll show him as a lamb. And then there's one last, very last, the very last of the foundation principles that happens last, which is?
Judgment.
Yes, it's the finite world, and it all comes to an end, and there's a judgment that brings it all. And then that judgment is the making right of things like the fallen world, and finally removing evil and death and all those consequences of the original sin and all the sins that have followed since that time. I was just going to quickly go through the Bible verses. That these are not the only ones. These are, I think, some of the best that represent these very ideas. Personal infinite God is eternal, immortal, invisible, which sounds scary, but at the same time, he is patient or long-suffering, and he's not willing that any should perish. You see that? I just want to stop and say, somebody put their thumb up if they see my screen and hear my voice just fine. Okay, great. Thank you. Man is spiritual. Way back in Psalm 8, the psalmist noted that we are just a little lower than the angels and crowned with glory and honor, as opposed to the natural world. The world has fallen. It began at the very, very beginning of the Bible, a record. Sin entered the world, death spread to all men, and all have sinned. And even the creation itself is subject to futility or emptiness. There's the bondage of corruption. The whole creation groans in labor. So this is fairly pessimistic picture of the world. And if you've lived for very long, and we heard some of it right before we started this lesson, didn't we, about people who are suffering and facing death shortly. I mean, we have to admit it, and aren't we all? And we can kind of look around now and see that there are diseases, there are organisms that are not meant to make life easier or more pleasant, but make us suffer more. So that happens. And then the other three principles is this propositional revelation. Interesting, man has been given the ability to speak and use language and to express thoughts in a way that others can share those very same thoughts through the means of those words that are transferred. And God used that as a way of revealing to us about himself, about us, about the reason the world is the way it is. And so he taught, and the men were moved by the Spirit of God to say the words that they said, combining spiritual thoughts with spiritual words. And of course, the coming of Jesus is the centerpiece of a Christian worldview. It makes sense that it would be. Oh, got to let somebody in. That's Sewell. And that's the centerpiece in Jesus. He showed us the glory of the Father, also came in the world to save sinners. So, and then finally, the earth will be burned up, and after this, the judgment. And I know this is review, but I'm just kind of going through these. Now, those are Bible verses that kind of are good expressions of that, but I'll just go through the sub-points as well. There was an original creator. And now, I think when you go to say to somebody, you know, there really is a God, sometimes they might say, oh, sure, that's right, there is. What they mean is, if you believe in one, there is one. If you don't believe in one, there isn't one. And somehow they mean that if in your head you have one, or if in a culture's head they have one, then there really is a God. But what they mean is there's an idea of God. That's not what the Christian worldview says. It says no. Whether you accept it or not, whether you admit it or not, whether you believe it or not, whether you hate it or not, it doesn't matter. There is an original creator, and it doesn't depend on us either to think he's good or kind or evil or harsh or anything. It's true. And he has personality. That means that he has a relationship with us and even with other spiritual beings. There are things that he knows, everything, that we don't know. And he also communicates. He does not find himself bound by time and space, and can be everywhere and see all times at one time. And also controls things, is immanent and acting in the world. So despite the fact that he is the creator outside the natural world, doesn't share any of the natural characteristics, though, starting with the creation, but then after that, other acts, he continues to control the world, act in the world, according to a plan that we don't know, but we believe exists within his infinite mind. So that's the picture of God. Meanwhile, man is spiritual. And that means though I have a physical body, which is decaying, as we talked before the class started about certain people, that all of us are really in that situation. But we have a spiritual consciousness. And it is the part of us, really, that, as Paul said, it motivates us to search for God. And when we don't find the God we like, sometimes we substitute something in his place. But the fact that we're trying to find something, it seems like is kind of interesting. It means we're unique, I think, with God having created that desire in us to put something in the upper story. Y'all remember the stories? There's just man and nature. We just want something up there, don't we? Because it's just hard to accept that this is all there is, and there's no meaning, and there's no purpose, and there's no answers to my deep questions that I have. Where did those questions come from? So I want to have something in the upper story. So that's part of my spiritual consciousness. Same time, I choose my responses to good and evil in the world. We believe that, and we believe there's free will. And I think actually every human believes that at some level, maybe not an intellectual level, but they act and live that way often. And we're accountable to God for the choices that we make. And if we make choices, good or bad, there are serious consequences on not only me personally, but even on others, which suggests that I have a great significance in God's plan. World is fallen, means there's lots of painful things around us. Good and evil continue to exert influence, and I struggle between those two influences with my free will. And then finally, as I always point out, we still imagine, though, a perfect world where those conflicts and those imperfections don't exist. Where did that come from? Where did that desire for a better place come from? And it seems like Eric read a quote from C.S. Lewis not too long ago in a sermon, didn't he, that kind of said, just when we think it, when we have a need for something, that's kind of proof we were designed for that. Doesn't mean we'll get it, but does mean that something in us causes us to long for that. I have no idea what's happening with the animation there, but we'll ignore that. Let's see. So the Bible is revelation from God, and I can actually transfer it to other men, and God transferred it to me by verbal statement. It's consistent through time, even though it has grown in its completeness. Jesus came. Again, he was physically present. He was really here. He was a figure in history. It was recorded. There were eyewitnesses, multiple eyewitnesses. The testimony can be tested for its consistency, both with history and against the other sources of testimony. In his coming, he revealed God's will and character. He provided a healing solution to sin's consequences. According to a set of rules that God had put in place before the foundation of the world, that sin, disobedience, had to be punished. I don't know why he put that system in place. I just don't know why. But he did, and that's part of the propositional revelation. And whether I understand that or not, whether I accept it or not, or whether it's the plan I would have come up with or not, I can understand its implications. And the implication is that God himself had to share in our nature and had to suffer as an innocent human to pay the penalty for our sins. And then finally, the temporary universe. And God, again, in his last act of interference into the natural world, beginning with the creation and then revelation and then ruling in the kingdoms of men and then sending Jesus and then judging in other ways all throughout history, will bring again the final judgment on the world and correct all the imperfections that exist and judge those who were there. All right. I want you all to participate with me again. I'm going to try to unmute everybody again. Just to review, because I think you can't really see these foundation principles quite as well as when you imagine the alternative. If you didn't believe in a personal infinite God, what would you believe in its place? And of course, there's four or five different ways, different things. They're not, all different from each other. But so what's one? If you didn't believe in a personal infinite God, what would you believe in a positive sense?
There is no God, or maybe there is a God, but he doesn't do things in the realm of men.
Yes, that's right. So either he isn't there at all, or he is there, but he might as well not be because we don't see any of the effects of his actions. Okay, so that's good. And those two words, personal and infinite, and if you flip those around, maybe that second thing you listed, Nikki, is the impersonal God who has no relationship, or maybe is not capable of having a relationship. Maybe that could be it, as in he's just kind of a gas, or she is just a gas that infuses all of nature somehow or another. What would the opposite of an infinite God be?
God who is somehow limited in his power and knowledge.
Yes, right. He wishes things were better, but he just can't do anything about it. For example, the powers of evil are just too strong, and God can push him back a few times, a little bit he can. Maybe one day he'll win, but at the moment, he can't handle it. It's just over beyond his ability to do that. So that would be an example of a finite God.
Marty, I was thinking even with all like the Greek gods, they all had different powers, at least from what I understand. Sure. It wasn't like a god of thunder or a god of whatever. It wasn't like there was just one god that encapsulated all of it.
Well, and that also implies if they had power over one thing and another God had power over something else, then each of those didn't have power over the other things. You know, there's this kind of, they had their own little regime. And we even know in the Bible history that there's a kind of a picture of the pagan nations who believed their gods were limited to my space, right? There might have been a god of the hills or the plains or the sea or the sky and so on. So all of those are examples. But all of those are, I think, man's attempt to come up with something in the upper story. A lot of times his own inventions, limited somehow, maybe because he wanted them to be limited. But in any case, I'm sorry, I got to let Nikki in. Okay. All right. So what's the alternative to what we mean by man is spiritual? If you didn't believe that, what would you believe?
That man is physical with no spirituality.
Yes, that's all. And so he's just a set of molecules and chemicals and electrical impulses, and there's really no meaning beyond that. And that's, at least intellectually, I think that's what a lot of the so-called smart people today would believe, although I would assert they don't actually live that way. Yes, so that's one.
Man is nothing more than an evolved monkey.
That's right. And we talked about, even Darwin was saying that bothered Darwin a little bit even. We looked at that quote a few weeks ago. Now, there's also the sense that we have some spiritual value as a life form. And maybe in somehow we're part of God because God infuses everything. I don't really know. I get confused when I start thinking about all those other possibilities. But anyway, there's some of them. And then the other is, well, man was just created by God like the animals or other forces of nature, and so he just does what he's supposed to do, but he doesn't make choices. And therefore, there's no guilt. So if I do something that hurts someone else or that other people don't like, there's still, you can't really say I did wrong. I'm just doing what God programmed me to do or what nature. All right, fallen world, I'll kind of go through some of these myself. One view is the world is perfect, and that really, even though it seems bad, everything's happening for a good purpose, and there's not really evil at work in the world. That's a pretty stupid view, but I suppose some people might hold it. More likely, people would just believe, well, the world is what is. The physical laws, there's nothing good or bad. Those are values that don't really have any logical basis, just laws of physics. And I think there is a kind of a notion, I sense it sometimes, that the world isn't perfect, but we can make it perfect. And I think a lot of the what's behind the social gospel is to make heaven on earth. That is, you know, there's not really a heaven, and the whole business about sin and all that's just kind of icky and bloody and all that. But that's not the deal. The thing is, our goal as religious people is to relieve suffering all over the world. And if we work hard enough at it, we can turn the earth into a perfected place. I think that's a view that people maybe don't say it out loud, but I think it drives a lot of the social, you know, programs and so on. People give their life for social causes, even though, I mean, it's, I guess in the hope that someday they'll really fix things that are not fixed today. Okay, opposite of Bible is propositional revelation. What are some opposites of that view? That principle?
Marty, something I read today, I think if I remember it right, is that the Bible was made up by men who stole all the ideals and concepts from other cultures.
Well, that's quite an accomplishment, even if it is true, right? I mean,
well, I presume they would argue that, but it was, again, it was interesting. Anything from any other society was stolen by the people who wrote Bible.
So, one of my sons gave me a book by Jordan Peterson, and that's, I don't know where he is today. It seemed like he's evolved a little bit. I think he got queried quite harshly a while back about whether he was a Christian or not, because he sure did seem to defend Christian values. But his position seems to be that all the civilizations have made an attempt to try to come up with universal truths, and maybe that the Judeo-Christian tradition came as close as anybody ever has so far. That's kind of the idea. But what's common in what Danny said and these other ideas is that it's just all kind of invented by man. Doesn't mean it's a bad invention. It's maybe very clever and all that, maybe valuable, but still not something that comes from outside the world, outside our wisdom, outside our limitations, and so on. So that's one, and probably the primary one, I guess, today.
The Bible is subjective.
Yeah, that's right. That's good, Teresa. Meaning that you read it, I read it, I come to a different conclusion. That's because we're supposed to, right? What it is one of those, it's like a, I don't know, what were those, the oil lamps, you know, that had the colors and stuff. You look at them and it gives you a mood, it gives me a mood, it gives you an idea, it gives me an idea, but it's not the same idea. It just creates an effect on us. And I worry sometimes even that we study our Bible that way, where I'm thinking about something and I just plop it open and I read a verse and somehow I know that affects me a certain way, instead of looking at it like I'm really investigating this. I've got to start at the beginning. I've got to see the big picture and the little picture. I've got to make this make sense throughout from the beginning to the end. Approaching it that way as a propositional unit, as opposed to, well, just reading the Bible is good for you, right? And it leads me to all these wonderful thoughts as opposed to something to really be investigating.
Hey, Marty.
Yep.
So I know someone who would, at least up till probably recently, consider themselves to be an atheist, but that believes that going to church and believing in God can create a better overall culture, because there are things like kindness and sharing and giving and those kind of things embedded within the falsehood that is Christianity. But if you are smart enough to come to those conclusions outside of being spiritually minded, then you don't need those things.
Yeah, right. That's good. I mean, that's bad. I mean, Yes, that's right. And you know what? So what's also there in the whole premise that it comes from God is a kind of a importance, significance about it, where it's not a take it or leave it, right? It's not, you just, if you can't quite make sense, you just keep, have to work hard at it because it's worth it. It's valuable to do that. And so anyway, these are the ideas. Subjective, God doesn't speak to us at all through these pages, these dead letters, you know, this book and everything. Oh, I held up my phone, of my Bible here. It's not this. It's not words, dead letters. What it is living emotions and living spirit and all that kind of thing. So there's some sense in which it still comes to me in miraculous or mystical sense. I think some people believe that the Bible might, maybe, but really this is old and outdated, and so the church has to update it over time. So those are all alternatives to that view. And then the coming of Jesus, I always feel obligated to go faster, even though these are the most important points of all. What is an alternate view of Jesus that probably most of the world believes?
He was just a good man.
Good man, right. And even, interestingly, most people agree that he's a historical figure. And most people agree that as a historical figure, he had a deep impact on some disciples. They were willing to die for what they heard and saw. But still, that's kind of the idea. Maybe the best man that ever lived, but still not God in the flesh. And that, of course, rules out all the redemptive elements of it too, right? The sacrifice for sin and all that. So that's good. A talented preacher, inspired in an earthly sense. He came from God, but he only had an allegorical message, maybe. That's part of it. Maybe he was just an idea. Those are ideas. And then different views of the physical universe. One is that it never will run down and never really had a beginning. It's been eternal, was always here, will always be here. That's kind of hard to square with science at the moment, anyway. Of course, science thinks today. More likely, people think that the universe will eventually just run down. And when it does, it'll just go out with a whimper or a squeak or something, and there will have been no real purpose or no conclusion, no resolution of things, and so on. And then I think a lot of people believe that because it's hard to accept that we, when we die, that's it. It's hard for humans to accept that. I wonder why. Where did we get that idea? A lot of people will cling to the idea that something happens after we die. And maybe if we're pretty good people, we go to heaven and stuff like that. So, and all of that, of course, in the afterlife has got to be pure speculation, independent of revelation from God. Doesn't that make sense? I mean, no matter what you believe, if nothing's telling you about what happens after you die, how do you know to guess? And some people are just dead certain that they're going to come back as a frog in the next life. And I just don't know how you can be that certain about something you've never been through or experienced. Okay. It's taking too long for my review. All right. I'm done with the review, but I kind of promised we'd revisit the t-shirt later. Are y'all okay with that? I'd like to think through what she said. And what I'd like to do, first of all, is list points of agreement. So if you have a pencil and paper, I'm going to read through it again and write down any ideas you have that would kind of represent things that you could say, you know what, I kind of agree with you on what you just said. Or maybe you could say, based on what you just said, I think we both have the same opinion about, and you could put something in there. So that would be good. And then I'm going to have a little exercise where I want you to work in groups and clarify her worldview. And some of that will be speculation, I know, because she doesn't say all that much, although she's pretty talkative, really. But anyway, and then I have a little animated thing I'll go through. And if we could slow her voice down and had time to think while she was talking, I have a few comments that we might stick in along the way that just kind of interesting things that ought to come to mind. So I would pretend to be the guy in the seat behind the two of you. And as you're talking, I'm listening in and thinking about what you ought to say, but you're not thinking of it. So maybe some things like that. We'll do that. And maybe a few more probing questions. And then at the very end, I'll suggest somewhat of a logical approach. If I wanted to say, time out, we're not going to get there if the conversation keeps going like this, how would we restart the whole thing and maybe approach? So is that okay? We'll go do that the rest of the time. That's what we're going to do. And I'm doing this based on the presumption, which you may or may not agree with it. The T-shirt lady probably does represent the kind of a pretty common American media-centric, you know, freedom-oriented worldview. So anyway, all right. So I'm going to read at this point, and I have to do a little bit of manipulation here to bring this up. There it is. Okay. All right. Here's the discussion from an airplane. And if you need to interrupt me, you're free to do that. Just say, what did that mean or whatever. But I'm just going to read straight through, and we'll go back through and bring up this dialogue later. A middle-aged woman, short hair, no makeup, in a T-shirt, sits next to you. And she says, are you from Atlanta? Yes. Me too. Are you headed out on business? Yes. I've got to be out there till Friday, by the way, at San Francisco. How about you? Oh, I'm meeting my partner out there, and she and I are going to get married and take a few days to celebrate. I really wish we didn't have to travel, though. I'm ashamed that my own state government doesn't make local businesses support our right to the kind of wedding we want to have. Since every halfway intelligent person knows nowadays accepts our right to marry. Well, I don't claim to be halfway intelligent, but I wouldn't approve of it. No kidding. See, that's the problem we're dealing with. It's really not your business to be deciding what's right and wrong for other people and imposing your personal values on them. Well, they're not really my personal values. I believe a thing is right or wrong for everyone, regardless of who believes it or accepts it. Well, that's crazy. Everyone has their own beliefs based on what they've experienced, how they were raised, and so on. For example, most people haven't had the experience of being naturally attracted to someone of the same sex, though that's changing, I hope. And so there's no way they could understand my feelings and what I've been through. I just want to have the right to make my own choices of what's right for me, just like you do. Well, I don't actually think I have the right to make my own choices about right and wrong. What? I try to follow what the Bible teaches about, religion. I figured that's where you were going. That's so lame to hide behind religion to condemn other people and justify what you personally want to believe. Actually, my faith in God leads me to believe things that I personally wouldn't have chosen to believe and do or not do. Things that I would never have chosen on my own. See? That's a perfect illustration of why religion is so harmful. Like the radical Islamists and the Sharia law and Catholic inquisitions, religion could be okay if you kept it to yourself, but most religious people invent a set of laws and force other people to follow them and condemn everybody that doesn't believe and act as they do. I'll bet you're a right-wing conservative trying to vote in people that will outlaw abortion and bring back racism and homophobia. Well, no, I don't think government can make much difference in any way that really matters. So you're not politically active? Not really. Well, look, I don't think what you believe would improve things if other people believed it too, but you must think so. How do you think you'll ever improve society or the human race or protect animals or the planet if you just sit back and don't get involved? Not that I want you to, of course, but I mean, think of the progress that our country has made in the last 200 years. Slavery abolished, segregation ended, women able to vote, the end of sexual repression, gender equality. You must be aware that most popular religions are making the same progress, like including women and gay people in the clergy. Yes, and those religious groups are wrong to do that. You don't have women priests in your church? Well, no, not in the way you're thinking. We don't have women in public leadership roles because we just follow the Bible. Whoa, you really are lost in the past. You probably don't accept evolution or the round earth theory either, do you? I don't mean to be rude, but people that believe like you have always been a great barrier to progress. Do you ever consider changing with the times? Do you know how long it's been since what you believe was popular. Actually, I don't think what I believe was ever popular. And it doesn't change. So you believe stuff that was never widely accepted is against science. It's stuff that you don't understand or agree with personally yourself. And you think everyone else should believe just like you do. All right, there's the dialogue. All right. Did you jot down some things that we might find as points of agreement in that? Sorry, I need to unmute everybody.
There are things in the world and in our society that need changing.
Good. Yeah, I think you both agree. Yeah, I mean, we could philosophize about that, which suggests that, first of all, there's a standard that makes some things bad and good that we have to move toward good, right? And second, that we have the ability to affect that change. And I might wonder, does that mean changing the heart of people? Does that mean they make choices? I could go down that road a long way. But, yeah, what's another thing?
I think she says most religious people invent a set of laws and force other people to follow them and condemn everybody that doesn't believe and act like they do. And I think that's a talking point.
And so are you agreeing that many religions do that, or even most religions do that?
I think so.
Yeah. So that's interesting you would say that. I think if you'd lived in America forever, it might escape your notice that most of the rest of the world has religions like that, right? But over here, very few religions have that sense of absoluteness. In fact, they would be quite embarrassed if someone accused them of being so narrow-minded as to think another religion was wrong, you know. But that isn't true, is it, for other major world religions? I think we forget that.
Are you saying is or isn't?
I think it is true.
It is true, yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting, you would say that. I think, you know, us narrow-headed Americans we don't have that experience much.
But I think even within America, with the different denominations, you do see different human precepts creeping into different doctrines, I suppose.
They do. And I suppose nowadays you don't see it as much anymore. But if you're going back in time, there was a time, a couple hundred years ago, where they did believe. If you didn't believe like me, you probably were wrong. And a few religions still cling to that even here. I think the Mormons, for example, would probably think we're all misguided. And the Catholics used to be pretty strong, but they're pretty embarrassed about that now, I think. Keep it quiet. There are probably others the same way.
Jehovah's Witnesses as well.
Yeah, thank you. Of course, anybody that says that becomes a cult. That becomes the word you use for them. All right, these are good. Other points of agreement.
Marriage.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. So, yeah, that's something you could explore. Why do you want to get married? What's the point of that? Is there some larger virtue in that? Yeah, good. Another one?
I don't understand your feelings, per se.
Okay. That's almost too trivial, Ryan, to count, but yeah, that's true. I don't know what's in your heart.
Well, it does open the idea of everyone struggles with different things, or everyone has different.
Oh, things. Great. Yeah, yeah. So if we only base what we believe on feelings, then we'll never have any agreement about that. That's good. Yeah, that's good. Now, she was approaching it from a different point of view to say, I've had this experience in life that you haven't had, so you can't see some truth that I have. But yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And Marty?
Yeah, Teresa.
I could agree with her on that slavery was wrong and different things like that. So it was good that we came to the point where there was no slavery.
So I hope everybody sees that that's a kind of a big thing, that she does believe there's some evil around, right? And that almost implies she believes that people should have known better than to do that. And that they made a choice. Do you hear some words in there that kind of sound like our worldview? They made choices. There's evil. They were tempted by the evil. They should have known better, but they did it. And then there's consequence. So a lot of those things, I think, are a good foundation. Yeah, thanks, Teresa. That's good. I'm going to go ahead and show you some of mine. Humans do have a universal, unique in the universe value and rights that deserve recognition and accommodation. She believes she has the right to something, to get married or whatever. Where did that come from? But I think most people believe that. Even quite humanistic people believe there's something about humans. They deserve something. They have the right to something, to not be a slave or to, you know, just to equal treatment or something. And I wonder where that might come from. She believes that some things are actually really wrong. She didn't use the word sin or immoral, but she used the words like lame or harmful, as if those represented a value stating something was wrong. And we would agree that there are things that really are wrong, and we'll probably run with that idea, as a matter of fact. She mentioned lots of bad things happen in history. She listed some, right? Mm-hmm. Slavery and Catholic Inquisitions and a bunch of other things. And we agree that, yeah, you know, those aren't good. And they don't seem right, and they cause suffering, and we don't think that should happen. And humans maybe should try to stop them, so that's good. So this is kind of an interesting dilemma, I think. She says some things that suggest she believes human-made things, including governments and religions, sometimes make mistakes. They have poor quality. At the same time, who is she – well, I was going to get this later, but who is she counting on to help us out of the current situation of prejudice and, you know, and homophobia and other things? Is the government needs to make some laws that, you know, protect those. So it's almost like, yeah, they're pretty bad, but still we got to count on them to try to make the world better. She admitted, or at least acknowledged, or knows it, that there are lots of religions in the world. There's two sides to that question. One is, why are there so many? The other one is, why are there any? Or why are there many in many different cultures? Those are interesting questions to think of. She acknowledged, I think, implicitly, that science and popular opinion do change a lot. Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. The round earth theory is kind of a poke in the eye a little bit to say that, you know, people did used to think the world was flat and they changed their minds. So, but those are, that I would agree that they do change. And I think there's an implicit agreement on some things that are good and bad. I think we could probably agree with her that some of the things she condemned in history are probably not good. And so it is clear that people, they have at least similar ideas of good and bad. And the other thing implicit in what she said is that people often still do the bad things, even though they kind of agree that there's good and bad that's very similar. Am I stretching the T-shirt lady's positions too far here? These are somewhat implicit. You might have to point them out, but I think they would be useful to do that. And I think she believes that people really can make choices. In fact, she kind of concludes by saying, and you think I should choose to be like you? Is that what you're telling me? And that's a dumb choice, you know that. So, but the point is that there is a choice to be made. Anyway, and then the whole conversation, seems to me, is an illustration that humans think up and communicate and understand ideas alike, even when they disagree. Even when they disagree, they can have this kind of propositional exchange of ideas. So those are ideas. I'm not trying to be smart aleck, but these are points I think that might be good beginning points for so what I'd like you to do is, in these five topics, which are in the chat now, nature of God and religion, science versus religion, if you want to phrase it that way, that's fine. Comparing science and religion, what would that be like? Personal moral decisions, universal right and wrong, and role of government. I'd like you to just think about what is likely her worldview about these things. And it might be she didn't believe in it at all, or just something man-made, or one superior to the other, or whatever. Just talk about it for maybe a few minutes, maybe 5 minutes, and try to get through all of these, a minute or so on each one. So we'll do that. Okay, I guess you're back whether you want to be or not, right? So,
yeah.
seemed like everybody was kind of waiting at the last minute to come back, but that's fine. I'm glad you had some stuff to talk about. Tell me, one of the reasons I wanted to do this exercise is I really think everybody kind of ends up with a worldview as they get to be an adult and become more consistent and don't change their minds every day about what they believe. Maybe they have somewhat of one as a teenager, but it seemed like there comes a time in your life where you start kind of thinking, well, you know what? I think I really what I think about things, or at least this is how I respond. So I think maybe this lady, as a middle-aged woman, has achieved some level of stability in the way she looks at things, and I would call that a worldview. So help me understand that, what she would think. What's her point of view about the nature of God and religion? Maybe I should call out the group number. Somebody in, if you remember your group number, group one, or did you even know your group numbers?
Do you know? I don't think we knew.
We didn't know our group.
Yeah, we didn't know.
All right. Since Mike spoke up, somebody in Mike's group, I don't remember who's in which group, but what is her view about God and religion generally? And you're free to speculate, by the way.
I think there was feeling, I mean, from a religious perspective, it was more man-made.
Yep.
And a set of oppressive laws.
Mm-hmm. And she says religion could be okay if you keep it to yourself.
What does that mean?
Just your inward belief that you don't implication share with others.
I think, don't you think the implication a lot of people think is just in your heart, right? And it's unique to you, and you got to decide your own way, and trying to express it, or even especially trying to force it on somebody else, is just not going to work. It's just inappropriate, you know, because it's an internally experienced thing. Yeah.
And I really think people like that hardly ever even think of God.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I say. So if we had to say what her view of God would be, it would certainly be that he was distant, didn't have much relevance to her life,
yeah,
but not active, no evidence of any presence or action or anything. And I think often it's easy thing to say, well, if there is a God, he sure is messing up, or he's evil, or, you know, how he let all this stuff happen in the world. And that's just kind of seems to me a way of just kind of putting that aside as not logical. Okay. All right. So here's what I said. It's man-made, self-determined, therefore private. What about science and religion? Somebody else talk about that.
Danny, religion is backwards, but it's making progress.
Yeah, it's trying to catch up with the ultimate, which is science, right? Man's search for stuff. So clearly, science would take priority. It's superior, even if there is some level of speculation in some of science, it would be superior. And in general, unless it progresses, it's going to be a boat anchor, right? It'll be a retardant to the progress that could be made with science. I think I sense that. I don't think we're putting too much, speculation on that. What about personal moral decisions? I heard some good discussion on this one.
Well, she definitely believes that people have the ability to make moral decisions, both right and wrong.
She didn't say those words out loud, but isn't that implicit in a lot of the things that were said? Whenever you blame somebody or criticize somebody, isn't it implicit? Do you think they could have done better and should have done better, perhaps, in the choice they made? Yeah. What would be her standard for deciding right and wrong?
Yeah, so that we talked about that she believes in personal moral decisions in a different sense, which is that every moral decision is purely personal and not based on any concrete outside standard.
Right. I think some people think that's a courageous position. That was, well, we're just on our own. Get over it. Do your best. Buck up. Be an adult. Live in the world where you just have to figure out hard things or something like that. There's some sense of courage in that, I guess. But anyway, I think that's the idea. It's not the same for everyone, and it's got to be based on the best you can do to figure things out, your own personal experience. But it is clear she does believe in right and wrong. And you see how that's a little inconsistent with the view that we're just natural world and that's all there is. Where did that value system of right and wrong come from? And go ahead.
I think it came from her raising. Like she talked about experience by being raised in her own.
Yeah, I didn't hear the last word you said. Being what?
How she came up, how she was brought up in her life.
Okay. And isn't it kind of true that children kind of inherently from their parents get the sense that you should do some things and you shouldn't do others? Interesting how that happens, even if it's divorced from religion to some extent. But no, I think she has a belief in right and wrong, which is not quite consistent. And, you know, she might say, well, you can do whatever you want as long as it doesn't harm anyone, and then you just do your best. But even the concept of harming someone has a value behind it, doesn't it? You have to say, well, what's wrong with that? Animals harm other animals, and that's not something that is unusual in the world or in nature, which is what we're a part of. So.
But there was, in some of her comments, there was an idea that some things are very definitely and incontrovertibly wrong.
Yeah.
Or right, right? And we've all come to the conclusion that slavery was wrong and that, you know, repressing women was wrong. We all agree on that, except for a few, very few backwards people. So there is a kind of a universality, but it seems to be based on public, a popular vote or something.
Yep, that's exactly what I was. Right is kind of what most but intelligent people accept. You see a danger in counting on the elite to figure out what's right and wrong, if you're familiar with history in any way. But anyway, yeah, that's right. And then I think we sense that, we really need to be active, and maybe the place to go to help things is the government as a more powerful resource than our own little sphere. And so government needs to make businesses do the right thing, and they, you know, government needs to eliminate the abuse of one group of people by another group of people and all of that. So that's kind of their role of government. I'm not sure I sensed in her discussion any higher authority at all besides the government that could make something like that happen. And that seems to me her view, but also a kind of a pessimistic view of the world.
But she didn't like government if it contradicts her purposes. Government was to reinforce whatever she believed and give her the right to do whatever she wanted to do.
That's exactly right. I hope y'all don't think I just built that inconsistency into her on purpose. I think that's the way people think about it.
I think so too. Yeah.
They don't like a lot of things government does if it doesn't agree with their own ideas. On the other hand, they're not sure where else to go to get things done and to fix things.
That's why they're so politically active.
Yes, right. That's right. In fact, the more active you are, maybe the more power of government you get to own, at least in our country.
Or you can almost say that government is their religion.
Yeah, if you think
in a way.
Right, it feels the upper story. We'll come back to that at the very end. That's my last chart. Don't we want something in the upper story? Do we wish something was in control? Something gave us meaning. Something set the rules for us. Something gave us some hope for the future. Something. We want something up there, and sometimes government could fill that role. And maybe it's the human race is a more abstract version of that. And that is the progress of the human race is the ideal we're shooting for. Maybe government's a means to an end. Somehow I'm making all that. All right. I've put her worldview on the left. I'm going to go through these quickly. I was going to make more of an exercise, but I don't think we need to. Do you see that in our foundation principles, almost all of what she believes are addressed in some way, in some ways refuted by our foundation principles? Do you see that? I hope you're able to think about it in those ways. She thinks religion is man-made, but we understand, no, there's an infinite personal God, and there's propositional revelation, and God came in the flesh. Do you see how radically different that is from a view that just puts man at the center and makes religion one of man's more interesting accomplishments somehow or another, and so on? And then, of course, judgment to cap it off. Science is superior. Of course, we understood that we're in a fallen world. God's propositional revelation has precedent because it comes from a much wiser source and all of that. So I don't need to go through these, but I hope you now can see that we've studied all these things, that these are pretty deep differences in what people believe as a kind of a foundation for how they reason and how they think. Anyway, I think you shouldn't be surprised at these. This one's interesting. The times or intelligent people, determine what's right or wrong. I think we understand that that's probably about the worst source to go to, isn't that? It's a fallen world in which evil seems to have ascendance for the moment. But still, that's a totally different view and probably a reason maybe we should be completely suspicious of a democratic form of government, maybe. Not to be too radical, but still, that ought to scare us a little bit. And then government fixing major cultural problems, Anyway, all right, you get the idea. So what I'm going to do here, and you're free to come in, interrupt me, or add other things, but I'm just going to go through some of the statements that are made and note some things that I think they're a little bit inconsistent, but they might also be little hooks that suggest a point that we could talk to her about what she really thinks about certain things, or maybe, and these are all in the form of a question. So if we could slow her voice down and we could insert these little questions as she went, it might be good to do that. The other reason I would need her to talk slowly is because I think so slowly. And I would need time to kind of come up with these things like I can when it's just sitting on a page like this. But let's go through these things. First thing I would say is she says, I'm ashamed that my own state government doesn't make the local business support. And so I would immediately ask, so you're saying the state government is morally wrong? I just asked, you know, so that's, and she would say, have to say yes, and you can kind of see where that would go. So there's a moral wrong, and it's wrong in the larger sense that a government might actually be wrong and do a wrong thing, right? And then I would also ask, is government enforcement always the best way to establish rights? And I might go down that rabbit trail and say, well, let's look at the course of history and see what record governments have had in protecting rights or exploiting people and that kind of thing. It's really not your business to be deciding what's right and wrong for other people. And so I would probably at this point, I'd ask the question, are right and wrong decisions always a matter of private opinion? Or are there some behaviors that are really always wrong? And actually, they're always wrong for everybody, even. And I might ask that question just to see if there's some ambiguity in her thinking, or if somehow she's figured out this is the lines drawn here. Everything on the left is your opinion, and everything on the right is universal. I don't know what that line is, but somewhere she maybe has come up with one, and so on. So that's a question. On conversation continues, she says, everyone has their own beliefs. And again, I'd ask the question, is there anything that's universally true or false, I think, not just right or wrong, but true or false, that's true or false for everybody? Or just the whole perception of the world, is it so subjective that everyone can believe everything different from everybody else, and they're all still right or acceptable or something? For example, most people haven't had the experience of being naturally attracted. So does that mean if I haven't experienced something that I can't ever know it? I have to have experienced it to have some belief about it or knowledge of it. That's one question. And the other thing I would probably ask right away is every natural inclination that people have, is that okay because you have a natural inclination? Let me tell you, I have some natural inclinations, and it's really a good thing that I don't follow them. Right. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You probably have some, too, especially if you have little kids or siblings that annoy you and other things. We get a lot of natural inclinations. We need to be careful about following them. So I would probably ask that. And follow up question is, how do I know which of the natural inclinations I ought to follow? The strong ones or the weak ones or what? Well, how do I know? I think that would be a question I would ask. And then I have the right to make my own choices of what's right for me. I would probably challenge what it means to have a right as a human being. But for this question, I would say, is every choice I make really about my own choice? Is there some place where I stop and ask, well, what about this partner of yours? Was she married to someone else before? Does that count? Does that matter? Or is that just a choice you made? And, you know, are there children involved? Are there next door neighbors involved? Is there a community around you that will be affected for good or for bad? Or both, probably, in her mind at least. What will it do to society? How do you determine it's just about me, if that's what you think? Or is it true that whatever I do in some ways leaks out and affects those around me? Sometimes it's so clear in the case of a divorce or something like that, but other times it may just be that it changes me in a way that's not good, but it certainly affects other people. So I don't know what's right for me means. I don't think it can mean that it only affects me, because there's no such thing. There is always the rest of the world. And I would probably ask her, so you really do think you make choices? Is that what you just said? That you have a free will and you can choose to do something else or not? And now, how is that different from the animals? Is it different? Or is it just you think you have choices, but it's really just an instinct? What's your thinking about that? I'd really like to know that. I'd like to explore that. If she's thought much about it, it'd be an interesting discussion. So here's religion. It's so lame behind, hide behind religion and condemn other people and justify what you personally believe. And I just want to ask this. This is my possibility question. I would just say, I'm not asking you if this is true or not. I'm asking you if it's possible that religion is more than merely a personal experience. Is it possible there's something outside the natural world that's supernatural? Is it possible that there is a personal infinite God? And if you rule it out, on what basis did you decide that's impossible? That seems a little closed-minded just to rule out the possibility. You see where I'm going with that? And so that's a... I would probably ask that question. Most religious people invent a set of laws and force other people to follow them. And so I wanted to ask, are there some ideas that come from religion, like charity, for example, that maybe we ought to force on other people? Maybe like tolerance. That might be her favorite, for example. Anyway. And then finally, not on this page at least, on what basis would you outlaw abortion or in-law abortion or outlaw racism, right? Why do you decide those are bad? What's your value system that you built that on? And I think her answer might be that it takes personal freedom away. I think personal freedom is kind of a big deal. Even though I don't know on what basis you decide we have a choice, the ability to choose, but still, personal freedom is probably a paramount principle there. How do you think we'll ever improve society? I might like to ask, have all or even most governments throughout history really improved society? And then if they have, on what basis do you judge that it's improved? Richer? Healthier? Live longer? Everyone has exactly equal income? What is it? No oppression of one class over another. On what basis is it better or worse? And that might be an interesting discussion. So here's a list of bad things: slavery, segregation, women not able to vote, sexual repression, gender inequality. And I would ask, on what basis did you decide those are bad? Are they bad for everybody? Are they bad throughout all of time, or they've just gotten bad in the last century when we've realized it? And throughout the world, have governments really eliminated these things, or do they all just they seem to remain forever and come and go with time? And I would probably try to ask this: do these bad things that are kind of always present, do they suggest that something is pervasive and permanently wrong with the world or not? Doesn't it feel that way? Or do you still hold on to this optimism that we can make the world better? I'm skip over some of this. Here's one: the evolution and the round earth theory. Of course, her argument is that, you know, you're ignoring obvious evidence of evolution. You're just like you would be ignoring obvious evidence that the earth is round. But are those really equivalent? Is evolution, which we can't observe directly, and the round earth theory, which we can? I've personally flown all the way around the world, never went east, and I'm back where I started. I've done it twice, actually. And I didn't go the other direction, don't rewind. I went west both times. Okay, so I've observed the round earth firsthand, right? And that's a little different from evolution, which is somewhat in the past and requires a lot of mechanisms that we don't even see today about how organisms operate. Let's see. Do you ever consider changing with the times? And I would probably ask, you know, how will we know when science is done? When is it finished? We finally got it right. And now we can trust that it will never change again in certain areas. So, and then I would ask her, have there ever been examples in history where what was popular and maybe an entire nation believed this ideology, or at least the privileged classes believed it, And that turned out to be really harmful and bad. And how do you know that's not happening today with regard to other things like some of the moral choices that are made? And then I would ask, so is majority opinion and current scientific theory a reliable and unchanging standard? And she would probably say, well, no, but it's better than religion. And I, that's okay. I just, as long as she would acknowledge that it's not permanent. It's not going to last forever. It has its own kinds of unreliability. Okay. Here's a few more questions I would ask. Oh, I didn't let you guys talk at all. Any other things about the conversation that you noticed that you might bring up as we go through? I grabbed all the good ideas first. I know. That's the advantage of being the teacher. All right. Here are a few more questions I would ask just to kind of see where her head was. On what basis are outlawing gay marriage and restricting abortions wrong? On what basis do you think that's wrong? I would just be interested to know. And I think her answer would be, again, that answer about freedom, right? Don't take away people's rights and their freedoms, as if that's a concrete, abiding, permanent, virtuous value. I don't know where that comes from exactly, but I think that's where she would go. Probably similar on the next question. Why is it wrong to not punish people for crimes like assault or theft? Or I'm trying to think of the right word, but whatever the crime of the Me Too movement highlights, that's a kind of assault in their minds at least, right? Maybe. Would it be wrong not to punish people who did those things? You know, on what basis would it not be right to leave them unpunished? That's a double negative at least. And then I would ask, regard to those two questions, would it be equally wrong to exercise the same kind of control or not over animals? Like if I saw an animal hurting another animal, should I put them on trial and throw them in jail? You understand what I'm saying there?
Marty,
or an animal. Go ahead, Emily.
Have you ever asked someone that?
No.
Oh.
But I kind of know she would say, well, you know, a dog, you know, my next door neighbor's dog, when we had cats, would come over and steal their food all the time. And it's interesting what Bob, my next door neighbor, said about that one time. He said, I'm so sorry. He said, that cat food is just a temptation that dog cannot resist, you know. It was kind of, he just gave up, right? Couldn't control the dog. But I wonder if that dog should be punished for theft. What do you think? 90 days, $30 fine, I don't know, something to teach the dog not to do it again. And if not, I think I'm just trying to get the lady to say no, because people make choices and they understand a sense of right and wrong, and they understand about hurting other people and a lot of things that we're just different. And so that kind of relates to the first two questions. Would ask this, why are there so many different opinions about right and wrong? And are there any that are universally wrong or right? And then if there is, why? I have to explore it. You know, I think Eric and Danny Campbell, Danny, you're on the line. Didn't y'all have questions similar to this in your meetup study where you invited practicing or evangelistic atheists to come?
Yes. Yeah, we did. We had one class on this whole idea of an objective, you know, moral truth.
And what was the answer to some of these, if you remember?
Oh, I don't know. I think there was a general consensus that there was some objectivity to morality. It was very difficult. As we looked at their heroes of philosophy that they would have put faith in, how these philosophers struggled with the idea of morality. You know, its origins, why we think the way we think. And so that there was a real challenge for them to say, this is what really is objective. Because what we're saying, you know, what we're trying to say is, what is the best answer for it?
Yeah.
And so we kept coming back to Christianity really presents the best answer for it.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying Christianity is actually just right and everything else is wrong. This really sure. is just the
so best thing. So you were arguing it's superior, but probably not so much taking the assertion, the Christian worldview, that it's external to human wisdom. It comes from the outside. It's superior because its source is altogether different. But anyway, I hear you saying two things. One is they acknowledge that there probably was something right and wrong universally, but also that it was difficult to determine a basis for it. Is that fair?
Yes.
As a conclusion, yeah. Yeah, I think that would be something to discuss. And all of these questions don't prove anything. I'm hoping that they leave question marks that you'll see in just a minute we might come back and be able to provide some answers. I would ask this question. Are there any religions who have beliefs about God that are correct? I don't have any idea what she would say. Well, I kind of think she would say, well, yeah, there's a few that get some things right or something. Maybe she would say that. I don't know if she believed in God at all. But I would follow up with the question, so that makes anybody who believes other than that wrong. So if some religions have kind of got it right, that means somebody else has got it wrong if they don't agree. And then how and why are they wrong and that kind of thing. Is everything a government does inherently right? Of course, she'd say no. She's already said that. And then why? And then I would ask again this follow-up question. Is there a universal standard of right that even governments should aspire to or be compliant with, and kind of explore that idea? Anyway, okay. So I'm going to suggest a possible approach. I should have animated this to go one thing at a time, but I might take something like this and say, okay, stop, time out. Maybe you have a better idea and we can discuss. I would say, okay, look, the kind of details we're into here on specific behaviors like gay marriage or abortion or women having the right to vote or slavery or whatever, those are obviously symptoms of other much more deeper philosophies that people either believe or they don't and disagree on. I'm going to suggest that our differences are much deeper than these specific issues and really even deeper than the place that religion has in relation to science and other things. And I know what I believe and practice on these issues at the moment seems absurd because we've started at such a very different starting point to think about them. Sorry, Teresa, it looked like she got out. So what I'd like to do is take a minute to describe a different starting place for thinking about some of these questions, and even maybe bigger questions about our existence as humans, the kind of people, what kind of nature we have, the purpose we have, and then the possibility of the existence of God and so on. I'd just like to, now I'm not expecting you to agree with me on this, and I don't expect you to accept most of what I say, but I would just like you to let me go through the logic behind them so that I can begin at the very beginning, foundation principles, we'll call them, let's say, about six of them, as a matter of fact. And I'm not going to try to prove they're right or wrong. I just want to show you that if you took all of these and put them all together, they kind of make a lot of sense, and they explain a lot of things, and they will help you understand maybe why I believe the way I do. If you'll just listen, if I do a good enough job explaining them, you can see that my position on these things are not as illogical as they seem to you, but it's because our fundamental starting places are different. What do you think? You think that would work? You got 5 hours on the airplane to San Francisco. That's almost 1 hour per principle, right? So you could work through this if she would let you talk. Enough, right? Any other ideas about how you might begin the discussion? Do you think it would be any use in continuing on with the way the conversation was going up to that point?
No.
No, I imagine you just expose more differences and more radical ideas that you both think you have radical ideas. But I think it might be a place to start. Now, I believe we looked at Paul's sermon on Mars Hill. I think he did almost the same thing, didn't he? Mm-hmm. He didn't argue against Hermes or, you know, these various temples or all the political system of the day or anything. He said, look, stop. I just want to talk to you about the unknown God. And he started explaining about God and that he created man and man searches after him. Doesn't that sound like spiritual man and personal infinite God? And all of that, and he even got down to Jesus came in the flesh and all of that. But at the same time, Paul was beginning to also offer evidence that those fundamental principles, foundation principles, were also had proof behind them. We didn't study that in this course. That's a course, I think, on evidences and some other things. We kind of skipped over that, said, well, if you did believe them, how would you look at things in the world, like truth and knowledge, like religion, like science and technology, like arts and culture, and so on. But I think if you were going to talk to this lady, you'd have to stop the discussion about the individual surface issues and kind of go back down to the foundation principles. And I will just say, and I've said this many times, we live in a world that does not hold to these foundation principles. Are you all aware of that? It seems like the more you think about them, the more obvious it is every day. And I think that the differences can only become more and more visible over time. And so we'll need to understand what we hold. I have one more point to make, and it's, I hope it isn't anticlimactic, but we've kind of hinted at this all along. But I think it's where we're headed, and this is straight out of Francis Schaeffer, okay? So I even gave the footnote here. But you remember this picture, and that is I can look to nature, and I don't have anything in common with nature on the spiritual side. I find no answers there, right? Nothing tells me I have meaning. Nothing convinces me that I have free will. There's a right and wrong. I don't get any help from nature. In fact, if I just looked at it, I would believe that I was just destined to die, and that was the end of the whole story. And so I really have a need for this upper story, and I need it because it provides me with an understanding that I have value, and there is meaning in my life. I'm here for a purpose. And also there are rules I should live under, and they're not rules that I made up or anybody else made up, but they apply to everybody. And if I live with those, I'll be more consistent with the laws that God set forth in his creation. And I have a hope for something later. You see how we long for that upper story? And what did Paul say? We search for him, and, you know, if perchance we'll find him. Though he's not far from any of us, he's personal. In him we live and move and have our being. So we long for that. But I think in a culture when man becomes so independent and rebellious against God and chafes under the rules that are part of the whole meaning and hope, but still they're hard sometimes, then we kind of eliminate God from the picture, and it makes us very uncomfortable. That's Schaeffer's point. And his book, little book, is a discussion of the various substitutes that man tries to place so that he'll have some sense of meaning, because we were created to search for that meaning. We were. And I think we're uncomfortable, made that way by God, when there isn't something up there. And so what are some of the alternatives? Well, science and philosophy. I think we're clinging to that mostly in our society today. But, you know, it's, well, I could argue against each one, but I think you know the arguments, right? Look at the world of this pandemic today and see some of the inadequacies of science, right, among other things, in addition to not providing really any real meaning about right and wrong and hope for the future and the value of human life or whatever it is that ought to come from that. I think personal experience tries to take the place of that, and that might include a religious experience that's mostly content-free. And I'm afraid many religions, especially more mystical ones, but even current denominations, are really more about singing and feeling and getting the spirit than they are about any real content. It's just more something I feel in my heart than it is something that I know and deeply believe and reason about. So I think that's a substitute, an inadequate one. Personal freedom, I think, would be very important to the T-shirt lady, the ability to self-determine, to do whatever I want to do, even if it offends others. I think many of the arts are kind of about freedom of expression and saying things that challenge our mind or get us outside the bounds of our old-timey thinking or something. But anyway, of course, personal freedom doesn't mean anything if all you are is nature, right? Part of the machinery of an animal. And still, I think there's this desire for that. I don't understand them all, but Francis Schaeffer goes into a lot of detail about how a lot of the philosophers are desperately trying to pretend there is such a thing as freedom and kind of making up things often related to the arts that that prove somehow that we're expressing our personal freedom, which is outside of nature somehow, a choice or something. And then governments, and it isn't a surprise that in the past, governments have been deified. Have you ever thought about that? Why is it attractive to have a Roman emperor that becomes a god, for example? And maybe it's because the gods that we had up there were kind of inadequate, and maybe I wish for something more real that would fill that upper story. And then I think as a kind of an act of despair, nihilism or absurdism or non-reason, which would include hallucinogenic drugs and other things, as just somehow at least an escape from the trap that I'm nothing more than a part of the machinery. I think those are attempts that maybe somehow modern man has tried. That's where we're headed. Sorry, this is Marty, the old man, talking now. Although I think Schaeffer would probably find it astounding that we made it to 2020 and the whole world didn't fall apart, I guess. Sewell, you may find it astounding that we haven't. I find it more and more astounding. Maybe God's preserving us for some purpose.
Not willing that any should perish.
Yes, that's probably it. I'm listening to Daniel's classes on Jeremiah, and it is amazing how long God allowed them, even through the time of Isaiah. They seem like they could have repented and maybe changed the course of history, but by the time you get to Jeremiah, it's over. The decision's made, and yet, you know, Josiah had a little reprieve for trying hard. At least it was postponed till after his lifetime. So I don't know. I don't know where we're headed, but I think that's one man's model of what goes on in the world when people deny God. And another man, or actually God's description of, is this, that if you do away with God in the upper story, you end up basically putting something, a product of man or man himself, in that square. And you change the glory of the incorruptible, personal, infinite God into the image made like corruptible man. There's nothing that can be put up there that's going to be nothing, it'll be nothing but imperfect. And worse, birds and four-footed animals and creeping things and so on. So anyway, I'm done. Did I go till after 9? I'm so sorry. All right. Well, I'm going to stop the recording. And
I just said we're not sorry.